Hey everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back for the 171st Green Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom call. Glad to have everybody with you. We're at 27, a magic number. That's how much I sent to Bernie Sanders about 5, 6 years ago. And we have a packed agenda, as always. We're going to start with the great Norm Stockwell, the publisher of the great Progressive magazine, who's going to talk to us about a major victory over gerrymandering in the state of Wisconsin. Norm, it's always great to have you with us. We're also going to be joined by John Brakey from Arizona, who's going to tell us what's going on in that amazing state with the usual mishigas of trying to protect the elections there. We've got Dorothy Reich with us. Dorothy, great to see you, the queen of Topanga. And Lissa Matras, the greatest sports fan in the history of the United States. Good to see you, Lissa. Jeff Mackler, you're new. You're going to be talking to us about, I believe, Mumia. In the second hour, we're going to do a big all-out whatever on political prisoners. We've got Vinny DiStefano, who's going to talk to us about Julian Assange. Tatanka Bricka, the erstwhile chair of the KPFK board, is going to talk to us about Leonard Peltier. We may or may not have Steve Donziger on. He's been invited. We hope we have him. And so it's going to be a full hour in the second hour on suppression and political prisoners, which we really, really need to do. We're hosted, as always, by Steve Caruso and Mike Hirsch. Wendy Lederman is with us. Letterman, I'm sorry. But everybody, we have to correct Wendy's name. We've been calling her Lederman. In fact, it's Letterman. And there you go. But you're no relation to Dave, the talk show host, which is fine with me. So this is going to be a great call. I see Paul Newman with us, Ron Leonard. We'll talk a bit about solar if we get to it. Jen Perlman, you are a podcaster, and we want to talk to you about your great work in Florida. Myra Reason's with us. So this looks like we're going to have a really great call. John Steiner, good to see you. I understand there's snow in Colorado, and we, those of us in LA, where the temperature is currently about 70 degrees, always welcome snow in Colorado. The more it snows in Colorado, the better we like it in Southern California. So thank you for that. So let's start out now. All sorts of news about Donald Trump we don't want to talk about. You can get that elsewhere. What we want to do is organizers learn early on that it's always critical and important to celebrate your victories. And the battle over gerrymandering in many, many states, but especially Wisconsin, has been really, really emblematic of what's going on in this country. And there's been a victory in Wisconsin over gerrymandering. And Norman Stockwell is one of the most important and influential people in Wisconsin with the great Progressive magazine, publishing since what, 1912? Is that it, Norm?
1909, Harvey.
1909.
1909, 115 years this year.
Good for you. And it's 130 since you published my first article in 1966. So there you go. But Norm, tell us what has happened in Wisconsin. And then we also want to talk to you about the guidebook, so remember that. But tell us what's going on in Wisconsin here.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. It's great to be here with all of you. And our brand new issue of the Progressive magazine just came off the presses, and it talks a lot about elections, electoral stuff happening around the country. But in particular, there's an article about the gerrymandering in Wisconsin. It's by a guy named Thomas Nelson, who's former state assembly leader. He's a county political official, and he's also a great watcher of things going on in Wisconsin. And he breaks it down, talks about the history and so on. I won't steal his language. You'll have to read the article, which is going to be up on our website probably tonight, progressive.org. We had a website problem this afternoon, and the site was down for most of the afternoon, but it is back up now, and so we will be having it. We'll have that article up there for you in a little bit. If you'll forgive me, I'm going to read something just for a minute because it's a complicated story, and this is kind of the background of all of it. And I wrote this, and it never got used anywhere, so I figure I'll read it here, and then it'll have a home. In a seesaw series of events during the past 6 months, Wisconsin, which had been called the state with the worst partisan gerrymander in the nation, finally got new maps. The 2023 election of liberal Milwaukee Judge Janet Protasiewicz to the state Supreme Court started the ball rolling. In August, a suit against the existing voting maps was brought before the state's high court. On December 22nd, the court ruled that the current maps were indeed unconstitutional and new maps would have to be drawn. Several groups, including the Republican-controlled state legislature and the office of Democratic Governor Tony Evers, submitted new versions of the maps, and an independent body designated by the court ruled that the various maps submitted by the Republican interests were too biased to meet the threshold. With primary elections looming in April and the need to print ballots, the pressure was on. It appeared the court might call for new maps to be drawn. Republicans in the state legislature, fearing an even greater loss, chose to pass a bill accepting the maps that had been submitted by Governor Evers. Maps that Assembly Majority Leader Robin Voss called, quote, the least worst option. As one Republican state senator named Van Wongard noted, it was a matter of choosing to be stabbed, shot, poisoned, or led to the guillotine. So we chose to be stabbed so that we can live to fight another day. On Monday, February 19th, Governor Evers signed the bill, putting the new maps into effect and basically making moot the process that had been initiated by the state Supreme Court. While many Democrats in the legislature voted against the bill, fearing some additional Republican trickery, Evers said at the signing ceremony, "Today is a victory not for me or any political party, but for our state and for the people of Wisconsin who've spent a decade demanding more and better of us as elected officials. The people should get to choose their elected officials, not the other way around." So Wisconsin now has more fair electoral maps than it has had in more than a dozen years, and those maps will give the Democrats an opportunity to eke back some seats in the state legislature that will allow the Republicans to no longer control these super majorities or almost super majorities in both houses of the state legislature. And that means that it opens the possibility for progressive electoral victories to continue to grow here in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, as they say, from your lips to dog's ears. So I remember on this call, when the race for Supreme Court, which made this possible, was going on, we had Andrea Miller, and many of us called into, once we figured out how to pronounce Protasiewicz, which
Protasiewicz.
I never got it. I really never got it. I mean, a poor Andrea Miller had to repeat it for me four times, and I still never got it, which is weird for a guy named Wasserman. But nonetheless, we did have a hand in that election, and if that election had not gone the way of Janet, this wouldn't be happening. So my understanding is that the map that Tony, that the governor signed, does not guarantee a Democratic majority in the legislature. Is that true?
That's true. It doesn't, it what it does is it makes the maps more fair. Wisconsin is still incredibly divided. It's still a state where there are large urban areas that tend to be more Democratic and large rural areas that tend to be more Republican. But what it does is it gives an opportunity for Democrats to begin to eke back some of the losses of the past more than a decade. The Republicans had a major victory in 2010. In which time they got the governorship and a large number of seats in the legislature, and they used that to draw gerrymandered maps. And then when 2020 came around, they drew another set of gerrymandered maps that were even worse following the 2020 census. And so this is a slight course correction, but it's still going to take work. It's going to take organizing at the local, the county level, the regional level across the state of Wisconsin to begin to regain those seats to more balance the legislature of the state of Wisconsin so that it matches the voting population. Because if you look at the statewide elections, Democrats have won pretty much across the board every statewide election, and yet the Republicans currently have majority of seats in the legislature. And so that's what these maps are attempting to correct. But it's going to take work. It's not in any way a slam dunk. It means that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, currently led by Ben Wickler, need to go out and organize at every level of the political spectrum in order to really rebuild that Democratic power in the state of Wisconsin.
So this now, what does this do to the congressional seats? Does this redo the congressional districts?
No, there was a separate case that was regarding recasting the congressional districts, and the Supreme Court chose not to hear that case because it was too close to the election. So we'll probably see that case come back again, maybe next fall.
What is the current balance in the Wisconsin delegation to Congress by party?
It's still majority Republican, but and if those maps were redrawn, there's a
Oh, you're breaking up. Norm, I kill your video. We'd love to see you, but you do sometimes you do better without the video. Okay, now try. Let's hear you.
Oh, I said currently the congressional delegation has a Republican majority, but if in fact this case goes through and the districts are redrawn, it gives the Democrats a chance to probably gain two more seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. So it's definitely something that people are looking to, but it's not going to happen before the November 2024 elections.
So Wisconsin is basically a purple state. It's what is the a percentage of the electorate of Republican versus Democrat?
Well, if we look at the statewide elections in the last round, governor, state treasurer, state secretary of state, and so on, those were all probably. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I apologize, Harvey, but I would say that there was a significant victory by the Democrats in all of those statewide races. So, if you just look at that as the measure of, the voice of the people of Wisconsin, what you see is that there's probably a small but solid majority of Democratic voters over Republican voters in Wisconsin.
Except the Democrats managed to lose the U.S. Senate seat.
That is correct. In the last round, the U.S. Senate seat of Senator Ron Johnson, who is an incumbent who had said that he would not run again, but then did, was not taken by the Democratic candidate, although it was fairly close. And I would say that it's pretty well agreed that if the party had put more energy into that race, that the outcome might have been different.
Well, there's only so much we can do with the Democratic Party, as we have learned with great pains. So, Norm
And
asked.
particularly the national, I think that what was really lacking in that last Senate race was money coming in from the national Democratic machine, and that we're now seeing in the next Senate race, which is coming up in November 2024, where Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin is up for re-election, is that there is a lot of support coming in from the National Democratic Party to keep her seat. And it's been termed by a couple of newspapers now as maybe the most important Senate race in the country. So people should definitely keep an eye on that one.
Well, I get at least four fundraisers from different states saying the same thing about Ohio, North Carolina. Well, North Carolina, I don't think it has a Senate race this year. Arizona, and John Brakey has joined us, going to talk to us about Arizona. But it's good to see Wisconsin in at least some form of democracy. I mean, the year 2010 was, of course, the year that Obama swept through the off-year elections, and the Republicans stole, led by Karl Rove, basically stole, at least a dozen states around the country and got them gerrymandered. And that's been the nightmare we've been living with. I think as publisher of The Progressive, Norm, you might want to follow your coverage of Wisconsin by looking at what's going on in Ohio. In Ohio, we've had two statewide referenda demanding that the maps be redrawn. We've had seven decisions by the Ohio Supreme Court demanding that the maps be redrawn, and they haven't been redrawn. And Ohio still has supermajorities in both houses of the state legislature and a 2-to-1 majority in the congressional delegation in a state that's about 54-46 Republican-Democrat. And, why did Wisconsin succeed where Ohio continues to fail? I mean, Ohio is a better football team. So, I mean, what's the deal here? Can you tell us?
I mean, I kind of thought that was somewhat of a rhetorical question, but I guess, in Wisconsin, we were lucky enough to have a Supreme Court case that was exactly the right case to answer the question. We had a Supreme Court liberal majority, they refer to it as, that was able to make a decision that was the right decision. And then we had a governor who was able to work with the existing legislature in spite of their majority on the Republican side. The Democratic governor was able to present maps that they were willing to accept as what they called, again, the least worst option, but still made a difference. And that difference is something that now the Democrats can build on in Wisconsin. So it was, a series of good fortune in having the right people in the right places at the right time, but also it was a constant battle that we've been fighting here in the state of Wisconsin for more than a dozen years since these current maps, or the former maps now, were originally drawn. And that hard work has paid off.
Well, in Ohio, you had a Republican majority on the Supreme Court, but the Republican Chief Justice went the correct way and approved better maps. On the other hand, you've had Republican governors, and you've had Republicans in the state house who will absolutely not give an inch. And so we have these nightmare maps in Ohio. They've managed to kill wind power in Ohio, and God knows what else they've done. And there's been no progress at all on the maps in Ohio, as opposed to Wisconsin. So, this is something I think you should look at, because Ohio, only two Democrats have ever won the White House while losing Ohio: Franklin Roosevelt in 1940 and John Kennedy in 1960. And no Republican has ever won the White House without carrying Ohio. So since Lincoln. So, what's the matter with Ohio here? There's been progress in Michigan. I believe that the maps in Michigan are now significantly better. I think they're better in Pennsylvania. But, Ohio is just this radioactive anchor on American democracy. I had a piece about it in Truth Out, actually. Maybe Steve, if you find the link, if you can put it there. But I think if the progressive, somebody needs to really look at this because it's a nightmare in Ohio, and we seem to be unable to make progress there. We keep winning referenda. Basically, the progressive view on referenda in Ohio tends to win 57-43. They won on gerrymandering. The last one gerrymandering vote was 75% to end gerrymandering, and still the legislature didn't budge. We won on abortion. We won on not having 60% required to pass a referendum, all by 57-43 or thereabouts. But the legislature in Ohio, I stopped. I lived in Columbus, and I stopped going in to the legislature. It was like Night of the Living Dead. It's like being surrounded by zombies in there. And I don't know what's going to take, but maybe you guys should assign somebody to really do the story on Ohio, because it's critical. We did want to raise one thing with you, Norman, while you're still here. Wendy Letterman has been working on the guide, and she's got a new version to send you. The guide we're the People's Guide to Grassroots Election Organizing 2024. And she's our point person on that project. And we're game. John Steiner's been working with us on it. Steve Caruso. We're game to, if you're game, to work with the progressive on it and see if we can put out a joint guide to grassroots organizing. I have all this material from Andrea Miller and Ray McClendon and the stuff from Georgia. So Wendy will be sending you a new PDF. And if you can go back and forth with her, that would be great. There's my
Thank you.
truth on Ohio. You're welcome to steal everything from it and give it to one of your writers, but somebody's got to deal with Ohio now. And of course, we have the seat of one of the best senators that has been in the Congress for the last 20 years, Sherrod Brown, which is up for grabs. And they've nominated this horrible Trumpy that guy. So if you'll take a look at Ohio, that'd be great. Someone challenged my assessment that Ohio has a better football team. Ohio State has been regularly beating Wisconsin, but of course we can never forget that the national champion this year was the University of Michigan. So I don't want anybody, least of all Lisa Mantrose, to forget that that's the reality. Okay. Thank you, Norm. Is there anything you want to add? Wendy, you got your hand up for Norm? And then we're
I
getting
do.
John Brakey in Arizona.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, I want to bring that up, and thank you,
You got to
Norm,
kill your
for all
video,
of that,
Wendy.
and
You're
for
breaking up.
we'll talk more about the guide. But I did want to I'd be remiss if I didn't mention. Okay. I hope that's better. So I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Florida in this conversation and what happened with DeSantis, like drawing his own maps with a Sharpie and taking it to the state that, well, the opposition took it to the state Supreme Court and pled like a really awful case. Like they did the whole procedural thing wrong. But even still, the state Supreme Court said that the maps weren't legal because they gave like 20 red districts and 8 blue districts. And DeSantis is like, well, I don't care. And then the whole legislature is like, well, we don't care. And then the state Supreme Court was like, well, I guess we don't care. So we still have 8 blue districts and 6 and 20 red districts from, I think it was like a 16-11 split before. And we got the new chair, Mickey Fried, who really kind of ruined the election for Charlie Crist. And the whole this all the Florida progressives, like it's kind of a split between the progressives in Florida and the Democratic Party, which I'm sure Jen Perlman will get a little bit more into. She's running for Congress against Debbie. We don't say her full name here, Schultz. And but yeah, I'm hoping that Florida will be included in whatever conversations come up, because it's just absolutely catastrophic what's happened here. And we've lost so many progressive and left leaning just
Right.
because of the malarkey going.
Well, the gerrymandering nightmare that really took over in 2010, Obama, being Obama, got up and very coolly said, "Oh, well, we have a shellacking." I mean, it completely destroyed the country. The 2010 There's a great book about it whose name I can't say, RATF dot 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 KED, about by David Daley, I think his name was, about what was done in 2010, and Wisconsin was a victim of that. And it's great to see you turned it around. But you know, Ohio, Florida, Arizona, Nevada, other states were really clobbered by that. And so maybe a piece of, you know, coming out of it was called the Red Map, you know, election there. And we got to get through it, or we're just not going to survive. And it certainly, of course, affected the U.S. Congress, not just these legislatures, but the Congress as well. Dorothy Reich, did you want to jump in here?
I just wanted to bring a message from Steve Donziger. I was just on the phone with him, and he said to assure you he will be on at 6 as requested.
Oh, very good. We'll be glad to see him. So, Norm, is there anything else you want to throw at us? You and Wendy are going to be in touch, I hope, on the
Yep,
guidebook.
definitely, definitely, and encourage people to check out the progressive.org, the new issue. The articles will start rolling out this week. The paper printed edition is in the mail to those of you that are subscribers, and we look forward to continuing coverage on this and so many other important issues in the weeks and months to come as we roll towards November 2024.
Well, everybody should be a subscriber to the Progressive magazine. You know, I go back, like I say, to the 60s, and Norm is as great an editor and publisher as has ever been there. So it's really good to have the Progressive in our corner here. And I don't know how you got progressive.org for your website. You must have had somebody really quick, but there you go. So, Norm, thanks for that report. And it's good to hear the news from Wisconsin. And you'll be in touch with Wendy, and that's great news too. Okay, there you go. There's the Progressive magazine. Always beautifully laid out, always very easy to read, and always right on point. So let's go to Arizona now. John Brakey, our great campaigner in Arizona, a real path breaker. John, there's a lot going on in Arizona with the districts as well. And we're thankfully rid of the horrible Kyrsten Sinema, but we're looking at Carrie Lake. But nonetheless, what's the latest with election protection in Arizona?
Not good. They're didn't, you know, they're using me. I've been sued. I was sued about 18 months ago. We went to court. We won the court case. In that case, the judge said to Santa Cruz County, which is Santa Cruz County, they sued me in Pima County. They promised me the records on the August 18th to have them in that year. And then they sued me. And then we went to court. And when they got into court, after the judge read my lawyer's brief, he said to Santa Cruz County, "What are you doing in my court? Why isn't this case in Santa Cruz County? And what are you doing suing a requester? It's a requester's right to ask for these records." And then he turned around and awarded us attorney fees, and we won and chastised them, and they appealed. And the appellate court, which is another kind of a crazy deal, okay? The guy who was on the bench is the same guy who screwed me 10 years ago in the RTA case. And at that time, he was a lawyer working for the Republican Party, okay, and a precinct committee man. He wanted to be a judge. He put his papers in, and then they called him and they said, "Hey, you want to be a judge? Well, I'll tell you what, we need you to write an amigos brief because we want you to create a conflict of interest because one judge who heard the case retired and he hung his
All right.
law degree at that same client. And
So,
so that
John,
caused Tucson. Maricopa.
where do we stand on gerrymandering in Arizona, and what are the likelihood that we'll have a fair election this fall in Arizona?
It's hard to say, it really is. I don't think gerrymandering is so much of a problem here, but I would say that a good election is an election that is verifiable. And it has me concerned that they're using this case to block records all over the state of Arizona and using me until this case is resolved. And so,
you have a progressive Secretary of State who was just elected, and you have, I guess, a reasonably progressive governor, although that remains to be seen. And you survived the insane ninja attack on the election in 2020. What are we looking at in 2024 for the statewide elections in Arizona?
Well, I'm hoping that by April 15th, this case may be put to bed or shortly after. And that means cast vote records will be legal to get. Okay. And of course, you know, all my time off, I've been working on a special program that will take the cast vote record, and we have developed a system that we can hyperlink into the cast vote record the ballot images and the cast vote records. And then that way we'd have elections that no more Wizard of Oz coming out saying, here's the results, that 2 days after the canvass is done, they must publish by precinct in the state of Arizona, I hope, okay. We have another bill going on right now that Ken Bennett's pushing, the same one from last year, but it only applies to general elections. The other thing I'm planning to do is that once we get this thing resolved in April, hopefully by May or June, I will be chasing the Attorney General's Association, Republican and Democrats, getting them to understand that the problems in elections are complicated, but the solution is very simple. It's called transparency, which happens to be the currency of trust. And without it, our democracy is dying in darkness. And Trump is saying that if he doesn't win, it's going to be a bloodbath. I think the only way to counter that is to have proof that people really did win and lose, and that they released these records.
Will you in Arizona this fall have hand-marked, hand-counted, digitally scanned paper ballots that we can rely on? You have an oddity in Arizona where you have Republicans like Ken Bennett, who's been on this call, who are committed to fair elections. So yes. What are the chances that we will have hand-marked, hand-counted, mailed out, digitally scanned paper ballots in Arizona?
50-50.
Okay. Well, that's better than most states.
Let's say this. The Attorney General is with us, you want to understand? Of course, Adrian Fontes, Ken Bennett, and a lot of people.
Adrian Fontes is the newly elected Secretary of State.
Very good man.
So you have the AG, you have the Secretary of State. What would derail the ability to have a fair vote count in Arizona?
Corruption.
All right. So there's nothing new in Arizona. No different.
I'm afraid this is a problem that's happening all over the place. And you know, I know that I've been targeted. You know, I was in North Carolina. They ticketed me. Lynn Bernstein won the case. I choose not to be a plaintiff because I'm from out of state. And secondly, she would be a better plaintiff because she's well-established, the whole thing. We won that case. That election director will never take a job again. I mean, he got dismissed after the case. And then she got her attorney fees and costs back, which was good. But it's a miserable thing.
We're with you all the way. We want obviously, the whole election could turn on Arizona. You're saying the districts aren't so badly gerrymandered. That's good to hear. And that we've got you there fighting for hand-marked, hand-counted paper ballots that are digitally scanned. That's what we want. Myla Reeson, go ahead, Myla.
But, you know, when we talk about hand counting and, we're talking about digital counting with a ballot library because everybody can count. We are preparing that we'll have one database that has everything, but it's too big for everybody to have. We want to break everything down by precinct, and we want to train people that two people could get together, and believe it or not, in a precinct, they could audit the whole thing in 2 hours.
Right. Well, you are the great pioneer. You're the great pioneer in this. You're a true hero of election protection. I want you to keep us posted from Arizona. Myra?
I just want to say, I took off 4 months because I was under tremendous stress because of working at a sausage factory. That's what I call the Arizona legislators. You know, Mark Twain is right. Watching legislation being made, it's like watching sausage get made.
Well,
It's
and
real.
I understand that the Arizona legislature is not kosher. So, Milo,
Especially
go
right
ahead.
now,
Milo.
because it's a high tide. And I don't know if we will have a bill passed this year, but I do know one thing. We're committed, and we're not going to give up.
Good. So, John, I have a question. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I do have a couple of questions. I recently have been watching quite a few interviews, not all of them current, but with the former Secretary of State, Russie Bowers. And in those interviews, he strikes me as a fundamentally honest individual, independent to a degree, who seemed to be very confident about the election process in Arizona. And I'm wondering whether you've had an opportunity to work with him at all, and whether he is in any way supportive of your project. And then I also have a follow-up question or an additional question that Steve Caruso asked me to ask, but let's first focus on Russie Bower. And has he been
a
helpful
good man.
Or supportive?
Him a friend. Okay.
Can't hear you too
he's
well.
With us. Rusty is a honorable man. We may not vote the same way, but he's highly principled like Ken Bennett.
And
I don't know what happened. There must be something in the water in Arizona. You have these principled Republicans. Maybe you can bottle it and ship it. Go ahead, Milo, again.
The question, John, has Mr. Bowers been supportive of all of your project to increase the transparency in Arizona elections?
Yes.
He has. Oh, good.
And
so he's on board.
He lost his
I know,
election.
I understand that, but I was still wondering.
Milo, what's the second part of your question?
And then it isn't really a second part. It's Steve Caruso asked me to ask if there are any pilot counties for your software in the country.
Yes, there is, and I'll be releasing them. Right now, it's a good question, is that we're in beta, and we are building a new computer because it's a lot of data. Right now, I can set up a 7,000 in 11 seconds. I can do a 150,000 in 3.5 to 5 minutes. But when I start putting something together over 300,000, I have to get a bigger computer with an i9 processor, more RAM, and I'll have that probably within a week to 10 days. And yes, I will be releasing betas. This is remarkable what we invented. And I am just so excited about what this can do for democracy. And that's why immediately I'll be counting on my friends here to get with the attorney generals. Hopefully we'll be able to raise some pretty big funding that we're talking to people to help launch this and run a campaign across the country to educate people that the problems are complicated, but the solutions are simple. And here we go.
Well, good for you, John Brakey. You are a real pioneer. We have 50 people to hear this. It's really great. And we're going to come back to you and get more on this system. Myra, thank you for those questions. We really appreciate it. All right, John, keep it posted from Arizona. You look great, by the way. You look like you lost a lot of weight.
I've lost 40 pounds. And, you know, it's interesting. The trick was I didn't know that I had an addiction going on to sugar.
Oh, well, everybody's addicted to sugar. So there you go. Good for you.
I lost 40 pounds and I'm eating great. I feel good. And I don't sleep with a sleep apnea machine any longer. You know what? I'm ready to get back at it. And you know,
right.
When I quit for a while, I had to because I'm an activist who works with love. I'm driven by love. And I started being driven by hate. And when that happens, when you harbor bitterness in life, love will dock elsewhere. So I had to dock somewhere else and get my act together.
Well,
that's what
you.
I did.
You're fabulous.
I came back strong.
We're going to keep having you back. This what you've done in Arizona with Ray Lutz and everybody is just absolutely essential. So keep it up.
Thank you.
50 people now. It's great to have you with us. I'm going to go now to Jen Perlman in Florida. We're hitting the high spots here: Wisconsin, Ohio, Arizona, and now Florida. Jen, you have a podcast, and you're doing a lot of work in Florida. Wendy Letterman has brought you to us. Tell us what you're about here with the upcoming elections.
So we did get redistricted like everyone else, and I honestly do not know whatever the controversies may have been. Our district is actually less gerrymandered than it was, so I actually wouldn't complain about that. We have a podcast called Generational Change with a J. We've been on for 3.5 years. We cover some local, but we cover national. We cover, just nonpartisan policy-based issues, really pushing a, an actual leftist kind of policy platform. And that's what we're about. I wish I had more information for you all about all the election and the voting nonsense down here. I am personally inspired that our current Broward supervisor of elections is not someone who's best friends with our congresswoman. So for me, that's a step in the right direction. But I don't have any more like details about our districts or anything like that.
Well, Wendy has mentioned that they are gerrymandered. Now, you're running for Congress. We don't endorse people, and we don't allow candidates to raise money on our cause, but we do like to talk to candidates about what they're standing for. You're running against Debbie W. We don't pronounce the full name, Schultz, just as we don't say Lee Oswald in the middle there. So tell us why you're running and what you hope to accomplish by running in this election.
So I first ran in 2020. It was suggested to me that I do that as somebody who is non-corporate, won't take corporate money, doesn't need the job, not looking for a new career, and somebody who, this was not the mud pit that I wanted to get into. And we did that in 20, and I was amazed at how well we did given a pandemic. We got close to 30%. And we were unable to canvass for about 2 months, which for grassroots is pretty hard. Our district lines have since changed in our favor. Our incumbent has lost a lot of her wealthy Jewish community that was our Miami-Dade portion of the district. And we have since gained an area that is more working class and people that are very canvassable areas. So it changed, and we took off 22, not knowing where the district lines were, and then this year just really thought this might be the perfect storm to unseat her. And I do think there's a lot of things falling into place. I really am kind of policy fluid. I stand for the least of these, and my whole thing is just everybody deserves a life of dignity and justice. So that can look like different things. I am running as a Democrat because I'm closer, I guess, than I would be to the Republicans, but really they don't speak for me either. We do live in a closed primary state, if people don't know. So the only way to unseat she who will not be named is in a Democratic primary. That is, this, we're a plus 12, it is what it is. So this is, it's very strategic. But this year, I'm really focusing healthcare, housing, and jobs. I'm really going to be promoting the 21st Century Economic Bill of Rights. I love the idea of putting out federal job guarantee out there into the ether. Like, I know that, that's kind of maybe a little down the road for people, but I think it's a great concept. Basically, she and I are virtually opposed on everything except we both support a woman's right to choose. So I think, and we both like the LGBTQ community. But other than that, I would say that she and I could not be further apart on everything. So whether it's domestic policy that I support social safety net, support health care as a right, think everybody is entitled to a living wage, crazy things like that, or the fact that I would never take money from the military industrial complex and support mass murder around the globe. I also do not support fracking. I mean, things that she's invested in, and I've just been watching this for 20 years with her. So for me, it's basically everything. It's other than she's pro-choice, which that I would even wonder if she just holds on to for fundraising purposes, because I don't see her really, I don't remember her trying to really codify it. So yeah, I don't
So
know what you.
is a decisive vote in the Democratic primary? Or are you in the
Yes.
general, in the primary? And she
Yeah.
will have, whoever wins the Democratic primary will have a Republican opponent.
Correct. But
Okay.
this district is not going right. Like the Republicans here, they kind of accept their defeat. I mean, they run somebody, but they know that that's not going to work for them. And that's why she's been sitting there for so long, because we have closed primaries. So all the NPAs and Republicans who keep saying, why is she still there? And it's because you can't vote in our primary. And that's very purposeful.
Okay. And I hope you'll look at the Everglades. I was on the Everglades Foundation for many years, and get sugar out of the Everglades finally. It will be a great thing. Okay. Thank you so much. And you do have a podcast.
Yes.
You can put your podcast in the chat.
Okay.
That would be great. Wendy has a hand. And then we're going to go to Dorothy Reich. We want to talk about the Supreme Court, upcoming Supreme Court decision on a woman's right to choose, and these two drugs that I can't pronounce. Go ahead, Wendy, please. Are you muted?
Thanks. Yeah, if Steve could make me a co-host again. Okay, sorry, I lost connection for a second. Thank you. Yeah, no, sorry, I didn't get to introduce Jen. She's a friend of mine. I've known her like 5 or 6 years, her and her partner. I know her. I know she's like super integrity. Like, she honest, like, if there is a true progressive, it's Jen. And she did really awesome for a newbie the first time around. We actually did poll tapes before scrutineers with scrutineers to make sure. So maybe her and John Brakey could talk more about, you know, making sure that things are on the up and up. But I just want to say that Jen's a friend of mine. I'm impressed because she took the momentum from her last campaign that she built and started a group called Generational Change, where it's actually a community service based group where they do like food banks and all kinds of stuff, and the podcast. So it's like she really does walk the walk. And I just hope everybody goes to Generational Change and follows her, and we'll hear more for her. And we actually maybe we're thinking about Jen possibly in the future doing like a simulcast or something. And we can all just kind of just everybody share networks, because we want the same revolution here. So thanks all. Yeah. Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, Jen, I understand you have a couple million followers. So that's really good.
I don't think we're there yet, but, you know, here's hoping. Here's hoping.
Yeah. I did want to ask very quickly, whatever happened with the referendum in Florida where they allowed felons to vote, ex-felons to vote, and then the legislature intervened? What has happened with that?
Nothing. Nothing has happened legally. Our formerly incarcerated people are able to vote. Nothing has happened with that. But there's this looming fear that they put out. And I don't remember it as much from the last election cycle, but right after the referendum, right after it passed, there were all these threats that, oh, we're going to turn it around. So they basically used fear tactics to keep people from voting. But as of right now, they're legally allowed to vote.
Okay. Even with, what about the fines that the legislature demanded be paid?
Well, some of them, this is what was being debated, is what constitutes fines, because it's not all fines. It's only reparations. So there were certain things that they were arguing about back and forth. And to be honest, I do not know what they ended up landing on, but I do know that they have not been using the same fear tactics to keep people from voting. But I do believe any restitution that is part of the original sentence had to be, like, that was what they were saying had to be paid. Okay. Yeah.
If you could find out some detail, maybe you and Wendy
sure.
will talk to us next week, that would be really good. Sure. Maya, and then we're going to go to Dorothy Reich to talk about the Supreme Court. Go ahead, Maya Reeson.
Yeah, Jen, one of the things that I am concerned about is that a lot of young people on the left seem to have been persuaded by unbelievable amounts of money poured in by the nuclear power industry to convince young people on the left that nuclear power is an essential component to combat our climate catastrophe. And I'm wondering, have you taken that on at all? Have you actually made your position known about shutting nuclear power in Florida and elsewhere in the world, and to stop the extraordinary expenditure now on the federal level of money that is dedicated to combating the climate crisis being used to shore up all of these decrepit nuclear power plants and extending their life around the country?
I appreciate that question, because I've been sort of evolving on this for a little while. We've had a couple of different people and environmentalists and authors on our podcast and talking about this. And I really never made like any sort of official comment on it, but I am at the point now where no, I don't support the idea of that. And I know that it's inherently toxic and poisonous. That's not something that I support. Now, this is where my business partner and I disagree. He thinks that it's a valid method. It's not something I'm interested in. I am much more interested in regenerative, sustainable degrowth. I am not with this idea that we need to at all costs maintain our style of living and utilize all access of energy and mining and whatever to maintain our level of living. So I'm just not in that camp. So I would be happy to sign something saying that I would be opposed to that, because from everything that I have, and I've looked into it, but I'm not a science person, but I am definitely not down with the idea of nuclear and the toxic and the poison and stuff. So I am very open to learning more about it, but I have never like taken an official position on it, but I can see that it's a problem.
Well, you've got four reactors in Florida. Two are close to you at St. Lucie, and then two are down at Turkey Point in Key Largo. So I know more about those reactors than I should, and we're happy to, but you need to get them shut as soon as possible, okay? And if your partner can't figure that out, let him call me. Okay, thank you so much, Jen. Nice to hear from you. And good luck with your
thanks, guys.
Campaign against she who shall not be named. Dorothy Reich, you raised earlier the decision coming in front of the Supreme Court tomorrow about the abortion pills, and I guess birth control pills. Do you want to give us a comment on what these people are about to do? Let's see if we can get you unmuted. Go ahead.
Let me unmute.
You're unmuted.
Go ahead. Unmuted?
Yeah.
When did I become the expert on this? Why am I the expert?
When you raised the issue at the beginning of the call. So
I didn't. I just said Steve Donner was coming, but I will tell you that that this mifepristone, is that what we're talking about here?
Yes.
It's totally insane that they could come 20 some odd years after FDA said these pills were safe and come in and say they're not. And they don't even have something called standing. The people who are suing have suffered no harm. They have no reason to be in court about this. There was just a John Roberts, in fact, just told the courts that they can no longer allow this judge shopping, that people cannot file their cases in jurisdiction where there's only one judge, as they've been doing in Texas, and getting judges that they know will rule in their favor, that they need to get in the judge lottery like everybody else and just file their, I mean, people are incorporating in certain districts their groups in order to be able to get their lawsuits in front of certain judges who they know will rule in their favor. And then even though they have no standing to even file the suit, the suit then gets challenged by the Biden administration, you know, and they lose, and then it goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court upholds these decisions, and it's totally bizarre, and that's what's happening with this mifepristone. This doctor said his feelings were hurt because he didn't get to have the pleasure of delivering a live baby because somebody used mifepristone.
Dorothy, thank you so much. Sluggo, it was Dr. Ruth who brought that up, and I think I think Dr. Ruth is ready to weigh in.
Okay, Dr. Ruth, let's hear it.
Thanks. Well, as usual, Dorothy is up on everything and brought up the good point, which I didn't know. It's ironic that the Supreme Court is saying you can't go judge shopping. It's kind of like, don't look here, look over there, you know. Anyway, the broader implication, besides what Dorothy said about the safety and the record and the, of course, right-wing court and their stripping women of their rights, is they would be overriding the FDA. And that is a big deal, because that means in the future, the court could decide what medicine you get. And I don't recall any of the court having an MD or having gone through medical school or a pharmacology course or anything. So Dorothy's correct, and it's also dangerous on a scientific level as well, let alone the, I would say Catholic and conservative view of contraception, et cetera. And of course, it is the slippery slope. You know, they're going for that, and then they'll be going for IUDs and other forms of contraception. So it's bad. And it's bad enough that I'm going to write the court. And I'm, as I said before, I've been, I haven't done that because I thought maybe they'd, you know, do a tax audit on me or something. But it's reached that stage.
Well, my understanding is that the abortion pills, there are two abortion pills, neither of which name I can pronounce. And they have been approved by the FDA for a long, long time.
Correct.
They're available through telemedicine. In other words, you don't have to go to a doctor's office. You can actually have a consult with a doctor by Zoom or by phone, and the doctor can send you or have sent to you these two abortion pills.
Correct.
And that's been going on for a long time. And now the Supreme Court will arrogate to itself the idea that they can decide whether this will continue. Is that correct?
Yes. Now, my guess is what they're going to do is make life difficult, meaning they probably won't outright ban it, but they'll probably say it can't be through the mail, it can't be telemedicine, you're going to have to go to a doctor's office, the doctor's office is going to have to be within, you know, X amount of miles of a hospital. My guess is that they're just going to make life difficult. But again, the slippery slope of not only going after contraception, et cetera, in the future, but also overriding the FDA, which has approved this. So thanks.
Wow, that's a big deal. Now, also, though, just recently, my understanding is that the birth control pill is now universally available without a prescription. Is that true? And is that being challenged by the court?
That is true. And who knows, you know, who knows who'll bring that up. But to Dorothy's point, this whole thing started with one judge in one county brought by exactly what Dorothy said, somebody who didn't have standing, and to a conservative judge, you know, a right to life, or I think his wife may be head of some, you know, anti-abortion group. And so, yes, Dorothy's right about the forum shopping.
Wow. Steven Spitz, go ahead.
Yeah. So tomorrow, Harvey, is not.
Please catch the rest of the show at grassrootsep.org. And please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Grassroots Election Protection Coalition. Thanks.